an Appalachian journey with recipes guides us through the surprisingly diverse history and vibrant present of food in the Mountain South. While Appalachia is often stereotyped and dismissed as a homogenous place, here, through 80 recipes and stories gathered on her travels in the region, Southern Food Authority Ronnie Lundy provides a deeper look at the region's complexity, from its wide range of native crops to the people bringing vibrancy to the food landscape. Again, the title of the book is Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes, and we welcome Ronnie Lundy to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm delighted.
Very nice to have you on the program. Okay, so let us begin with the title of the book, because I'm saying vittles, but if you go into your bookstore to purchase this volume, that is not, you may not be able to see that word on the book that you're buying. So tell us a little bit about what is actually spelled and how the two ultimately come together.
Right. We discovered that marketing flaw when a friend called me up and said that she had asked for vittles and someone had said, we don't have that book, but there's a new book called Victuals. So that is how it's spelled, V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S. And I think that most of us grew up hearing the word vittles in comedy. Granny Clampett would kind of jump up and wink her eye and say she was going to go cook up some vittles. And Mammy Yoakum in Little Abner, you'd see the word spelled out, V-I-T-T-L-E-S. And we assumed that that was a vernacular that was wrong. But in fact, the English pronunciation of the word is vittles. And somewhere in about the 15th or 16th century, they decided to Latinize the spelling of certain English words. And so they added a little C-T-U, victuals, to it. But it did not change the pronunciation. You know how Worcestershire sauce is not spelled like Worcestershire sauce, various other words. So it turns out that my people in the Appalachian Mountains have been right all along about the way we say them, and also pretty much about how we grow them and cook them and preserve them and share them around the table.
So ultimately, what did you want to do with the book and taking this journey with recipes?
Yes, I traveled about 4,000 miles through the southern and central Appalachian Mountains, meeting people and talking about the ways that they did all the things I just listed with their food. And what I was interested in doing, I was born in eastern Kentucky. I grew up in the culture. I grew up in the city of Louisville, but going up home on weekends and holidays and summers. And so I was very connected to this culture and identified with it. And as I grew older and went out in the world, I discovered that people's impressions of the people of the Appalachian Mountains were really not similar to what I knew as Appalachian culture. So food became a way for me to write about that. And when this book came along, when the idea for this book came along, what I was observing was that we were seeing this movement towards sustainable foodways, toward planting in smaller crops, rotating, using organic methods, backing away from industrialized farms and commercialized agricultural production. And in a lot of places where that was happening all around the country, people were having to research in books and papers and try to sort of piece together what had happened before industrial agriculture had come to that area. In the southern and central Appalachians, younger people and new people coming to the area who were interested in doing this kind of growing and learning the methods of preserving that included fermentation and drying as well as canning and putting foods up in mason jars, people who were interested in foraging could learn that from their neighbors because these traditions had not fully gone away. People still practice them today. And part of that is why the Southern Appalachians is the most diverse food shed in North America as well. So these were all things that I wanted to tell in this story, in this book, but I wanted to tell them in human voices, and I wanted to let other people tell their own stories, which is another thing that we've not been allowed to do. Often people come tell our stories for us, so I wanted the voices of the people that I interviewed to become clear in this book and for this to be their story as well.
You explore Appalachian foodways, the past, the present, the future. Give us a sense of where we are now.
Right now, where we are, we're in a very interesting place. You could roughly, and this is a generalization, and like all generalizations, it has its faults, but you can roughly divide the Appalachian region I talk about along the line of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which cut through. And to the north of that is the Cumberland Range and what are now called the Alleghenies. And that has been coal country. And that has been a place where minerals have been extracted since the early 1700s, or the middle 1700s, when they discovered salt and started doing industrial extraction of salt. So there's been industrialization in that area, and people have continued gardening, hunting, and foraging, but that has not been their primary way of feeding themselves. And now coal has reached its peak in that region. We are not going to be mining coal from that area, the result of cheaper coal being able to be mined in other places, and the result of more stringent emissions to address climate change, more stringent emission controls. And so people in the region are looking to move away from what has always been a mono economy and to create diversified economies, and food can be a vibrant part of that. People raising foods, people processing foods in traditional ways. There's a lot of interest outside the Appalachian region in the foodways of Appalachia, so people could create economies. Below the Blue Ridge, on the southern side, when we get into places like the Smoky Mountains and Asheville, North Carolina, and the Nantahala Forest, we have a lot of tourism, and we have a lot of development of second homes and vacation homes. And these bring issues too. So food is the way that we can talk about issues of water quality. We can create some restrictions on development that allow farmers to keep their land and to keep farming it, and we can create food economies there. So this is what the future looks like and what possibility it has. It also, I like to say, the future also has great perils, because we don't know how many things we can create that can take hold and truly sustain people. We understand that we have to create more diversified economies that look beyond food into other things. But we have this really strong connection to land that has never gone away, even when the land itself has gone away, even in the areas of coal country where entire mountains have been destroyed and the water tables have been irrevocably damaged. We still have people who find their place, who hold to their place and want to stay there and want to work with what is there. So we have a lot of possibility, but also a lot of difficulty.
I understand that possibility. So what does that say about the future and your optimism?
I'm basically an optimistic person, because why not? If it's going to turn out badly, you're going to feel pretty depressed anyway. So,
well, that's true.
Well,
sure.
We might as well be optimistic right now. And one thing I love about trying to create businesses based around sustainable foodways, and by businesses, I mean destination restaurants. Travis Milton, who's a chef that I talk about in the book, thought he was going to have to open his Appalachian restaurant in Richmond, Virginia, which is not in the Appalachians, but had a thriving restaurant community. And instead, he found investors who encouraged him to come home to the part of Southwest Virginia where he grew up and to establish three smaller restaurants in hotels that will be the attraction, a piece of the attraction of people to the area around Bristol, Virginia, and Bristol, Tennessee, Abingdon, St. Paul, Virginia, and Wythe, Virginia. So we're starting to see these things start to happen. And what's makes me optimistic about it is that nobody wants to plan an entire chain. Well, I'm not sure nobody does, but nobody I know who I think knows what they're doing wants to plan an entire chain of Appalachian restaurants across the United States that won't be using local products and that won't be able to use traditional methods because of their price points. People are trying to think of things that can be small and localized and involve the community as well as attract people from outside to it. And the beautiful part of raising sustainable food is that you get to feed your family the same food that you're creating. So we're not going to starve doing this, you know.
Right.
And really and truly, so much of our history of commercialized agriculture has been to create crops that the people who grew them couldn't afford to eat. So we hope we're going to break that model as well.
Ronnie Lundy is the author of the new book, Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes. The book is published by Clarkson Potter and a gorgeous volume, absolutely beautiful. And
Johnny Autry is the photographer. Charlotte Autry is the food stylist. And I feel like I got blessed by angels when they came into my life on this book. It's gorgeous.
Really, really beautiful. Again, it's Vittles, An Appalachian Journey with Recipes, published by Clarkson Potter. Ronnie Lundy, thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with the book.
Joe Donahue, thank you for having me.
Great
it
pleasure.
Was great fun.
Thank
Bye
you.
Bye.
Again, the name of the book is Vittles, V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S, to make it easier to find it in a bookstore of your choice. Vittles is the name. It's by Ronnie Lundy, and it's published by Potter. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.